Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's my game right here. I feel it. I'm telling you, I feel it. I taste it.
It's time for you to be legendary right here, boy.
This is First and Pod.
They could not run the ball to save their lives in this game.
Your favorite team through a national lens.
The beauty of this podcast is that we don't gloss over anything. We do every team in every game.
Instant reaction to all the big games all season long.
The NFL never seems to let us down when we need a banger, banger.
Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Filippone, with 8-time Pro Bowl corner and 3-time first-team NFL All-Pro.
Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it.
Patrick Peterson.
All right, welcome to First in Pod, the podcast that goes every game every week, and we have reached the last game, Super Bowl 60 in San Francisco, or more specific, Santa Clara, the home of the 49ers. Super Bowl back there for the first time in 10 years, and we have a rematch of Super Bowl 49. That was a classic between the Patriots and Seahawks, but just about every single person from that game, if not all of them, are gone. We've got all new cast members for this big matchup. My name's Andrew Filippone. The producer is James Jackson. Patrick Peterson is out in San Francisco doing Super Bowl media stuff, so you've got us for this episode, and we are going to go through all the important aspects of this Super Bowl and give it to you in a very digestible, easy to listen to, entertaining format. You can subscribe, rate, review to the podcast. Just search First and Pod and it's there for you. We try to do 2 episodes a week, drop into your feed, give you a reaction to and previews of every game. And we are brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more with America's number one sportsbook. We have given you some winning parlays and upset picks and things of that nature throughout the season, and we will give you our pick, and we'll see if it's a upset special or a lock of the year when we get there on today's episode. So, James, let's do this here. Super Bowl 60, Seahawks and Pats.
It is going down in Santa Clara. You said it, Pony. Reliving 10 years ago, going back there to the San Francisco area to play the Super Bowl. And before we get into a lot of things that we're breaking down, I want to get your take on this, because overall, you talked about how our man Patrick Peterson is down there in Santa Clara doing media stuff, but has this been a little bit of a anticlimactic Super Bowl week? I know we had a crazy NBA trade deadline that kind of took everyone's attention away for a little bit. You had an MLB tweet that went almost viral, I saw, so you've been on the MLB block too. But in terms of buzz and hype about this Super Bowl, do you feel like it's kind of down in terms of other years?
I do, and here's why. There's no Patrick Mahomes, so the Chiefs are not going for something dynastic. They're not trying to win 3 in a row. The Patriots are there, but it's not Brady and Belichick. So you've got, outside of what happened with Joe Burrow and the Bengals when they went and played the Rams in L.A., the AFC has been dominated by one of those two teams, Chiefs or Patriots, and they're both mega stars. So you don't have that kind of sex appeal to this Super Bowl. Seattle is new to this. It's a new coach. It's a new quarterback. I think to the casual football fan, the NFL, the Super Bowl is the most watched event of the year. So that means it brings in a lot of people that are not caring about football the way that we do. And so these are going to be for that crowd. This is going to be an anonymous team. The Seahawks do not have a long history of winning. They won that Super Bowl in New York against the Broncos when they blew out Peyton Manning back in Super Bowl 48. But outside of that, I mean, they're not a team that resonates, I think, with most of America. So that's probably why things have been downplayed. There's no controversies. There's no real scandals. Nothing crazy has happened to either team. No one has said anything kind of out of pocket that's created or generated buzz. And I think what I'm hoping for is that the game ends up delivering in a way that creates more attention after the game itself by just the quality of the game and things that happen. But
I agree.
As far as ranking the anticipation for this game compared to last year, let's say with the Chiefs or Chiefs and Eagles, you know, Chiefs and 49ers, you're right. Yeah. It's not on that level. And even like the Patriots going for a record number of Super Bowls doesn't seem to be a topic or narrative that really has generated a lot of buzz going into this game.
Yeah, and it's weird that you get a Boston team, a New England team in a championship format, and you don't have the massholes, so to speak, you know, out there kind of beating their chest and speaking loudly. I even think they're a little bit surprised is the word, but, you know, pleasantly surprised by where their team is, right? Like playing with a little bit of house money being in Drake May's second year, Vrabel's first year. Like they're like, you know, we didn't think we were going to be back here so quickly after the Brady Belichick era. And then, you know, the lack of quote unquote star names or star power.
Right.
I mean, I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they are for America here. They're not really the villain in this game. I mean, they are because it's the Patriots and they've won a lot and you don't want to see more nice things happen to them as a fan base and as a franchise, because they've had so much, but they're not portrayed here as the team that everyone's going to root against.
I actually think it's opposite, Pony. I think a bunch of people outside of New England look at the Patriots post Belichick and Brady with a breath of fresh air. Like, the evil empire was Brady and Belichick, not the Patriots. Like, now that they're gone, they're not dominating the AFC year after year after year. Like, they get a likable Drake May, whose wife is the first lady of the NFL now, all of a sudden, baking goods for everybody and having her own channel. You get Vrabel, who's a player's coach, and everyone seems to love him. You know, you just got a lot of likable characters over there. And so it's made the Patriots go from a hateable franchise to now, like, a weirdly lovable, darling franchise that people are, you know, like, looking at with whimsy. It's kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I know. I don't have that opinion of them. I don't, just to be blunt and brutally honest.
I like it.
So, like, I don't really – when they beat the Rams in Super Bowl 36, when they upset Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk, like, to me, they were, like, a great underdog story. And obviously they were super rootable because 9/11 had just happened too, and they were the Patriots, and just the symmetry of that I thought was really, you know, special for America and its healing process and everything like that. So, you know, you're never going to be able to recreate that. I also don't think that their Cinderella status is as pronounced this year as it was back then. Like, yeah, they went from a 13 loss team to a 14 win team, but they're not playing a juggernaut team. They're playing a team that had a very good season and has impressive wins, like the win over the Rams in the NFC Championship game. But like, if the Patriots win this game 10 years from now, I don't think people are going to look back on it like it's an upset, because it's Drake May, who finished a vote shy of winning the MVP award, against Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. And I think Super Bowls are largely, I think, defined by the quarterback matchups. And this is not a disadvantage. Like, New England goes into this game as an underdog, but they don't have a quarterback disadvantage whatsoever in this matchup. So I think it's, you know, my initial thought on this game was, Seattle, I thought, was clearly the favorite. But as 2 weeks have gone on here and we've gotten closer to kickoff, I think New England has a better chance to win the game than I originally thought. And remember, when we did our playoff preview, I did pick the Patriots to beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. But the way both teams played in the playoffs made me want to switch that pick. And we'll see when we get to picking time on this podcast if I stick with the Patriots or flip to the Seahawks.
He said, hold tight, audience, man. We'll see if Pony holds pat on his pick. We'll see. So overall, the matchup, when I look at it, originally I was looking at the Patriots going against the Seahawks defense, because a lot has been made about the Patriots opponents and who they got to play on the offensive end, right? They got to play a bunch of, you know, lower offenses. You get to play a CJ Stroud who has a terrible day. You get to play a backup, you know, and get to play Bo Nix. You get to play Jarrett Stidham in the AFC Championship game. But they had to beat defense after defense after defense that we told was very good. I told the Houston Texans defense was probably the best in the NFL through the whole regular season. We beat them. You got told the Denver Broncos had an elite defense with the best pass rush in the NFL. They get past them. Now you have maybe the best overall defense in the Seattle Seahawks, definitely one of the best on paper, and Drake May has to go through them again. So that is the first initial overall kind of matchup I'm looking at is, can Drake May overcome yet again another great defense? But if he plays the same way, I'm not sure he gets past Seattle's defense the way he got past Denver and Houston's defense.
I actually think the game has a chance to be really low scoring. The last time the Patriots won a Super Bowl was against the Rams, and there was the expectation that there was going to be a lot of points in that game because it was Sean McVay against Tom Brady. And that ended up being a 13-3 game. And it was not one of the more aesthetically pleasing Super Bowls. It was probably one of the worst quality Super Bowls we've seen in the last 3 years. Yeah, it was terrible. I think that there's a scenario in which the winning team might have fewer than 20 points in this game. And it goes along the lines of what you just said. You've got a Patriots offense that really is not, other than I would say the second half of the Chargers game in the wild card round, has really not looked in sync the entire playoffs. And I do think part of it is what you just said. I mean, look at the defenses they played. All three of them can really get after the quarterback, Chargers, Texans, and Broncos. But that's not going to get any easier in this game. Maybe a little bit easier in terms of, like, the Seahawks don't have as elite of edge rushers as the Texans and Broncos do, but their overall defense and the way that they're coached make it one of the best in the NFL. So with the struggles of the offensive line for New England, they don't have great playmakers at receiver and tight end. Like, I could see it being a very difficult day for them to generate offense. And honestly, I think the same thing can be true of Seattle. Like, I don't think the Patriots are man for man a great defensive team. I think it's more of a the total is greater than the parts themselves. Like, they do better than the individuals that make up the defense if you just look at it on paper. But they're coached well by Vrabel, and I would not be surprised if they go about this game and think, we're going to do everything in our power to make sure Jaxon Smith-Njigba doesn't beat us in this game, and then force the other guys in the Seahawks offense to make plays. And in the last month of the season, more or less, when teams were able to do that to JSN, the Seahawks offense wasn't as explosive, and Sam Darnold played a lot worse. So my bottom line is, we might Sunday night look back on this Super Bowl as one of the more boring Super Bowls if it goes down that way. And I think there's a very good chance it does, James, sadly.
I agree. And I think the more boring it gets, the advantage Patriots, right? I think the higher scoring it gets, advantage Seahawks. And you're right, Pony. This is a game in particular of matchups everywhere, right? It's less of Patriots Seahawks and more boils down to who's going to win those kind of individual or position matchups on a down to down key down basis. Everyone is looking at the JSN Christian Gonzalez matchup, and I agree that's probably the most entertaining one or the biggest one. But I'm also looking at, you know, the trenches matchup, right? Because I look at the Seahawks and really how they get after the quarterback. And you talk about the Patriots having to play a bunch of defenses that get after the quarterback. And the Seahawks might have an opportunity to do that without blitzing, right? One of the fewest blitz rates in the NFL, bottom six in the league this year. And it's because of, we know how good their defensive secondary is, right? So if the Seahawks are able to get pressure on the Patriots without sending extras, with leaving 6-7 in the back and kind of closing off those throwing lanes for Drake May, making it a lot tougher. And now you have guys like Witherspoon who can make plays on the back end, Woolen who can make plays on the back end and really make it tough for Drake May. And we know that offensive line for the Patriots has had its struggles this year, especially on that left side, right? Will Campbell has had his struggles documented throughout the whole season. If you can get guys coming off that edge, get home with four, that's how I think you really make life tough for the Patriots and Drake May. I think the Seahawks are able to do that in this game.
Well, we also don't know the extent to which Drake May is injured.
True.
And that's, to me, like a huge variable in this whole game. You know, it was a concern with Matt Stafford going into the season with his back, and it ended up being no big deal. He won the MVP Thursday night. We had the question about Sam Darnold's oblique coming out of the last game of the season against the 49ers.
Looked great.
And he didn't practice during their bye week at all. It was limited at the beginning of the week for the divisional round game and then looked great against the Rams in the NFC Championship. Didn't have to do much in their first playoff win, but that thing seems to have gone completely by the wayside. I think a lot of Patriots media believe that if there was not an extra week between the championship games and the Super Bowl, James, that May would have been really bothered by this injury against the Seahawks if they had played this game last weekend. And he'll get shot up with something. I mean, I saw Ben Roethlisberger in a playoff game against Denver that they lost. That would have been in 2015, the year the Broncos won the Super Bowl 10 years ago. The needle that went in to his shoulder to get him ready for that game was probably as wide as the table that I'm sitting at right now. I mean, it was unbelievable.
And who can forget the infamous, was at week 15, Aaron Rodgers, when he comes back out against the Bears after hurting his knee and his eyes are dilated wide and he doesn't even know where he is.
They'll do that, but I don't know how often he's had to have like a numbing agent or pain-killing agent to that extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember a game as a Steelers fan. This is like going back more than 20 years. They gave Jerome Bettis a shot to his I think it was a knee injury that he had, and they hit the wrong, like the doctor injected it into like the just missed the spot he was supposed to put it in, and it ended up causing his whole leg to go numb and he had to miss the game. This is a playoff game against the Ravens in 2001 before they lost to the Patriots the next week in the playoffs. So that's probably not going to happen, but all I'm saying is that it's an unquantifiable thing because we're not inside Drake May's body and we don't know to what degree they have to treat the injury to get him like in great shape to play. And so another thing I'm going to say, just like, you know, I think there's a scenario in which there's a low scoring game. There might be a scenario, James, where we watch the Super Bowl Sunday and it's like, well, this sucks because they're playing with Drake May at 50%. Yeah. And he can't make a lot of the throws and plays he's made with his arm all season. And if that's the case, I mean, got to love Seattle in this game. They'd have to really screw it up.
The proof is in the pudding, Pony. You hit it right on the head. If you look at the playoffs, Drake May's attempts per game, wild card round 29 attempts, divisional 27, AFC championship game 21 attempts. And then you look at the yards per attempt. Against the Chargers, 9 yards per attempt. Against the Texans, 6 yards per attempt. And then against the Broncos, 4 yards per attempt. I know the weather got nasty. I know a lot of things were at play. There's a whole first half of pretty good weather, throwing football weather. And they're still watching his attempts go down and down and the yards go down and down. And I don't think that's a coincidence, right? When you have a nagging injury for a quarterback, I think – Vrabel and McDaniels and everyone are trying to figure out ways to get the ball out of his hands quickly, get it to their players and not have it be so much on Drake May. So,
I mean, this is going to sound weird because we're talking about a quarterback that had this incredible second year and took his team from 4 wins to 14 into the Super Bowl. But I think Seattle is going to play the run here. I think they're going to make sure early in the game
that Ramondre
Stevenson doesn't get going. And I think they're going to stack the box here, put guys in the box, and force Drake May to make plays to his receivers and tight ends. And if he does, then they'll make an adjustment, obviously. But I know it's cliche to say that a team wants to stop the run. I don't think that's, by the way, that's not always true. It's just something that coaches say because it sounds good, because they think they're supposed to say it. I actually think in this game, Seattle's main objective will be to make sure that the Patriots running game doesn't get going, and keep them one dimensional and force Drake May to do what you just said. Keep those pass attempts up, because with their offensive line issues too, you've got sacks and fumbles and tip balls that turn into interceptions and things like that that could happen in this game.
Yeah, the most important down, at least in the beginning of the Super Bowl, is first down, right? Especially for Patriots offense. Patriots get ahead of the sticks on first down, it like gets a lot easier for them. They get into a lot of second and eights and third and eights and third and sevens, and they're going to find themselves in passing downs, and that's going to go advantage Seahawks. So we'll see. What's the next matchup we're breaking down, Pony?
Do you want to do the coaching matchup, or do you want to do like more? Let's do coaching matchup next.
Let's do the coaching matchup. We have Mike McDonald, two coaches who haven't had a long tenure in their current stay, right? Mike McDonald is second year over there in Seattle. Mike Vrabel in his first year, the Mike and Mike Bowl. So what is your first early impressions on this coaching matchup in Super Bowl 60?
So I think you've got to say that New England has a slight coaching advantage in this game. I don't think it's big. I don't think it's huge, but I think that they've got some level of advantage here. Just because you're dealing with two people who are calling the shots there that are not going to be overwhelmed by the situation whatsoever. I think one of the questions you always want to ask yourself when you've got, you know, first timers and new people in the Super Bowl is, are they going to, because it's the biggest game they've ever been a part of, are they going to do things that are unnatural to them? Are they going to try to do too much? Are they going to maybe shrink because there's nerves and butterflies that come with all eyes on them? I mean, anybody who tries to pretend like this is just another football game is lying to themselves. They're all humans. These games are not played by AI or robots. So the way these people are going to respond in these moments, in a lot of ways, is clearly going to determine who wins and loses the game. And Josh McDaniels has called plays in a ton of Super Bowls, and Mike Vrabel has at least played in Super Bowls. I know that's different. It's not the same thing, but the routine of the Super Bowl, the prep for the Super Bowl, like the feeling you get in the big moments, these are all things he's lived through. If I felt like the Patriots were a team that was made up of great players that really just allowed for a coach to ride coattails and get to a Super Bowl, like you're in Philly, James, I think a lot of Eagles fans feel like Nick Sirianni is a Super Bowl champion just because he has an unbelievable roster of players. It is very little to do with him. I don't think that that's obviously true of the Patriots. They have a great young quarterback. Everything else on the roster tells you that they're probably an average football team, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree.
Great corner, Gonzalez, even though he gave up a touchdown against Denver in a big play early. I think Milton Williams is really good. But, I mean, outside of that, like, none of these guys are all pro caliber players, not even close. So getting to this point, I think, is a lot of coaching expertise and the great job that they did. Seattle's coaches have passed every test too. I mean, Mike McDonald's got Sam Darnold in the Super Bowl the year after they were they were an okay team with Geno Smith. There was nothing special about them. They were fine. They were probably slightly above average, and they went from that to the Super Bowl. Clint Kubiak comes in and transforms their offense, and he's going to get the Raiders job as a result of it. So you love their body of work this year, but there's just, you wonder how they're going to respond with the jobs they have and what's on the line in this game. So that to me is a slight checked box for the Patriots that, you know, I believe in them in this game. I mean, the last time these two teams played in the Super Bowl, Belichick got into the chess match with Pete Carroll late and didn't call a timeout and waited for Seattle to make a mistake at the goal line, and they did. And if this game comes down to a similar moment, like I would give a nod to New England, but not by much. I think both teams are very, very well coached in this game.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because I look at the coaching matchup and I look a little bit deeper than just head coach on head coach, because I do think the coordinators come into play a lot in this game. And I'm looking kind of cross platform, right? I'm looking at offensive play caller or offensive coordinator versus defensive head coach as the matchup. So my matchups are more Josh McDaniels play calling versus Mike McDonald's defense.
Right.
Kubiak's play calling versus Mike Vrabel's defense.
Yeah.
And if you look at first the Seahawks offense side and Clint Kubiak, I definitely agree with you that I've always said the playoffs are an experienced man's game, especially in the NFL when you're one and done, right? Knowing, like, being in a situation before, being able to recall something you've done is huge in the NFL because of the margin of error. So I do think that's a huge advantage, like you said, Patriots side. When I look at what Clint Kubiak has had to do specifically with Sam Darnold this year, is there have been games where he's had to overcome very head-scratching performances from Sam Darnold, and they've been able to pull some things out, right? And I think that's a lot of defense, but I think that's a lot of Clint Kubiak knowing, like, hey, my quarterback doesn't have X, Y, and Z today, right? He doesn't have the normal, you know, kind of performance, the normal wherewithal that he normally does to be able to get it done. We have to get creative in how we move this offense and not hurt our defense too much to be able to win this game. He's had to do that before. So when you look at the job Clint Kubiak has done versus who he's having to go against in Mike Vrabel, it's all about, you know, can Clint Kubiak, if this game gets ugly, if this game gets to, you know, a under 20-point game, or maybe only each team only has one touchdown, can Clint Kubiak draw up those key plays, those key schemes, to readjust to what Vrabel is going to do? Because I think Vrabel, you know, the Patriots are the Patriots. And I think whether it goes from regime to regime, he's learned from his former head coach and Bill Belichick, we're going to take away the best thing that you do.
Yeah.
The best thing that you do is getting the ball to JSN in space. If the best thing that you do is creating running lanes for Kenneth Walker to get your offense going, we're taking away option one. So when option one gets taken away for Clint Kubiak, can he adjust and be able to take his team and his offense to plan B to option two, whatever that is, and still run it efficiently and be able to go win? And then you go to the other side with Josh McDaniels against Mike McDonald's offense. And I really think what I alluded to earlier is what he's going to have to do, right? Seattle may stack the box. Seattle may say, you know, you're going to have to beat us, Drake May, with the run. But then I really do think there is a huge scenario in which Seattle tries to get home with four. And Seattle tries to say, like, hey, we're going to make your life completely miserable, Drake May, and not allow you to see passing lanes, not allow you to have one-on-one matchups with any of our corners, and really make you try to pick us apart methodically like that. And then that's on Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels has already shown us that he's willing to take the ball away from May more and more and more, take the air out of the ball more and more and more, and kind of get creative with his offense. He might have to do that even more in the Super Bowl if, you know, we see that Drake May is compromised in any way. So those are the two things that I'm looking at. Can Clint Kubiak get creative in key situations to make plays? And can Josh McDaniels continue to have an effective offense while taking the ball out of his, you know, MVP front-runner quarterback's hands? That's the coaching matchup I'm looking
at. And this will be the first time ever that a defensive head coach, Mike McDaniels, calls plays in a Super Bowl win. It's never happened. No defensive head coach has ever been the play caller on a Lombardi-winning team. I mean, there have been defensive head coaches, obviously, that have won Super Bowls, but never where they are viewed as the guy that's calling plays on game day. So that would be a start of maybe a trend. Jesse Minter got hired by the Ravens, and it looks like he's going to keep calling plays We've seen that happen on offense forever. Andy Reid, Sean McVay. We might see it happen here.
And I'm very able
to get a win because, you know, the league's a copycat league.
Yeah, and I'm very interested to see how Mike McDonald and Clint Kubiak get creative with trying to get JSN open. So everyone wants to see Christian Gonzalez kind of follow JSN around the field. And if he does, are they going to try to get JSN off of that matchup in some way? Put him in a slot, put him in motion, get him on different routes to where Christian Gonzalez isn't the matchup, isn't one-on-one. We've seen them, you know, put JSN in motion in the backfield and have him see him. He caught a touchdown pass in the NFC Championship where he was motioning from out of the backfield. We see them get very creative with that. Are they going to try to do that? And how much are they going to try to do that if Mike Vrabel is saying, like, you know, Gonzalez, your matchup is JSN, where you go, where he goes, you go.
The thing that's good about having 2 weeks to get ready for a game is that you can kind of, I think, break tendencies better. So let's say Seattle wants to move JSN into the slot a lot to get him away from Gonzalez, or they want to find a better matchup. It's possible that New England in the 2 weeks leading up to this game completely installed a defensive game plan, defensive look that includes Gonzalez following JSN wherever he goes. And instead of having three practice days to implement that, you had an entire 2 weeks to do that. So that to me is what, you know, separates the Super Bowl from the other games, is that it gives these teams a chance to really, if they have to or need to, reinvent themselves in order to win the biggest game of the year as a way of counteracting what the other teams do well. I would want that if I'm a Patriots fan. I don't want JSN, you know, in matchups where you're counting on Carlton Davis or another corner, Jones, the return man, or, you know, your rookie safeties to be really responsible for making sure he doesn't have a big game. I want to go down with my best pitch with my fastball if I'm the Patriots, and that would be putting Gonzalez on JSN every chance I got. You know, there's another school of thought where Gonzalez takes Cup or Shahid, and then you double team JSN the whole game. You know, the Patriots would do that a lot when they had Darrelle Revis, but I don't know, man. You might say two is better than one, but I would just put my best guy
on. My best on my best, especially in a game where I think on both sides, individual kind of special talent isn't in abundance, right? You look on the Patriots offense, I'm not sure there's any one guy where you're like, we need our best guy needs to follow him all the way around the field.
Nope.
And
you're
for
right.
Seattle, Shahid maybe for taking the top off the defense. In terms of overall, there's one guy where I really feel like my best guy's got to follow him around the field, and that's JSN. So this very well could be like, Pony, is this the matchup that decides the Super Bowl really is JSN versus Seagull?
I mean, I think another huge X factor is what is Nicky Manwari's status for this game?
He said he'd be ready to go. He said in the press conference.
No, he didn't practice on Thursday. I thought he was Seattle's best defensive player against the Rams. He broke up three passes. He reminds me a lot of what the Chargers do with Derwin James, what the Steelers used to do with Troy Polamalu. Like, the guy can be everywhere. He could be at the line of scrimmage. He can be in the slot. He can be deep safety. He can come down and play linebacker. I mean, he is the ultimate Swiss Army knife to a defense. I thought he was the best defensive rookie in the NFL this year. I know that the Browns linebacker ended up winning that award, but to me, he got it because he was productive because of all the tackles he had. The absolute best defensive player, I thought, was Iman Wari. And I think he's given Seattle a new dimension for their defense because he's such a total jack of all trades player. Play to play, you just don't know where he's going to be. And a quarterback has to take time every snap to, you know, account for where he is and how that's going to affect what they do. And I just think that that's like, that's a cheat code for a defense, especially one that's as well coached as Seattle's. If you take him out, man, I think they get a lot more basic for this game. Because I don't think you can put another guy in there that can duplicate or replicate what he does. You know,
I agree.
It's like when I hear, you know, a team will get ready to play Lamar Jackson and they'll put a wide receiver at quarterback for scout team that week to try to give the defense a sense for like the speed of how Lamar plays. It's not the same thing. So the backup there in Seattle, the safety, whatever they end up doing, will not give the Seahawks the same type of defensive performance. So that to me is a huge, huge X factor. And if he's out for this game, then I give New England a much, much, much better chance to win. The other big X factor I have is just, does Sam Darnold show jitters and nerves in this game?
Ghostbuster. And everyone is, it doesn't matter how many good games Sam Darnold plays. It doesn't matter that he went out and had a really good game against LA. It doesn't matter that he dismantled San Francisco the week before. If he shows one sign in the Super Bowl of jitters or bad play, everyone will revert right back to "I told you so." See, right. Sam Darnold, we all knew. Like, people still cannot wait to do that.
And I'm not sure those people will be wrong if it happens.
I'm not sure either.
So what I think they need to do, and I don't think that they'll coach him this way, by the way. I don't think they'll be a conservative offense. Not but I think it'll be very, very, very troubling for Seattle if Darnold makes some kind of major mistake early in the game.
Well, here's what we can liken it to, Pony. When Sam Darnold said possibly one of the worst things you can ever say about yourself on national TV in a press conference, who was the defense he said that against?
That was New England, right?
That was New England. Now, I know Belichick is kind of separate from a lot of things right now down there in Chapel Hill trying to figure things out. But I wouldn't doubt that phone calls might have been made. Something might have been made to, hey, how did you have Sam Darnold seeing those ghosts? Because if he can get some kind of that game plan and put that out there again, who knows if Sam Darnold reverts back.
I actually think, as messed up as this sounds, even though Vrabel played for Belichick, I think Belichick would be more inclined to take Mike McDonald's phone call than to help the Patriots.
Why would you? I don't know. I don't know, man.
I really do. I don't think he wants any part of that franchise winning a Super Bowl now that he's gone. Darnold is just, to me, still somebody that you don't know how he's going to react to.
We forgive, but we don't forget.
Mistake. I think he's got to get off to a good start. It's like a basketball player who can get a couple layups early in the game and can see the ball go in, and that helps his confidence. I think that he needs the same thing. I think he needs some easy completions, some effective drives, even if they end in field goals, just something that gives him a belief in himself that he's going to play well. Early interception or something like that, I think, and New England's going to win the game.
I think Drake May
would have a much easier time bouncing back from a mistake like that than Darnold.
We might see New England send the dogs in the first couple of possessions just to really try to get after Sam Darnold. My X factor for this game is the best trade deadline acquisition of the year this year is Rashid Shaheed. And just like the last time these two teams played in the Super Bowl, the man Percy Harvin went crazy. Actually, no, I think that was the Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl.
It was, yeah.
Yes. But another special teams guy went crazy. One of my low-key favorite players of my childhood in Percy Harvin completely, you know, was the catalyst in that game running away for the Seattle Seahawks, right? Was, you know, a wide receiver who led the game in rushing, started the second half with a kickoff return of 87 yards. And we've already seen Rashid Shaheed take one to the house from the kickoff return in this playoffs already. We've seen him take the top off the defense many times. And for, I think, with all the talk of JSN and Christian Gonzalez going on, I think Rashid Shaheed is sitting in the corner kind of smiling and and twiddling his fingers, because with all that attention going there, I might get a one-on-one matchup to my favor. I might get someone like a Carlton Davis or a Marcus Jones on me in space. They might be so worried about JSN and Kenneth Walker that they forget about a Rashid Shaheed jet sweep, and I take one around the corner. And could he? Will I predict him to be Super Bowl MVP? No, because I think that is going to go to either, if the Seahawks win, Sam Darnold or someone on the defensive end if it's a low-scoring game. But I think that Rashid Shaheed is – will make one, two, or maybe three of those plays that either is a catalyst for a big drive, like a chunk play, or one of those back-breaking plays where New England's trying to get a key stop or trying to get back into the game and, you know, here goes a ball over everybody's head and Rashid Shaheed is running down the sideline for a big play. Or it's a key special teams play where, like, New England just, you know, needs to get the ball back and they punt it to Rashid Shaheed and he gets it into a spot where, you know, now Seattle is in the driver's seat. So I'm looking
at Rashid Shaheed, man. These are two of the best returners in all of football. Shaheed is the kickoff return guy that had the touchdown to start this Niners playoff game. And Joe was the best punt return guy the entire season. So,
and I forget who made this observation, but pretty much every other team in the NFL, their kick return unit sends two people back there. So there's a more dangerous guy and a less dangerous guy. If we want to kick it, if we want to return, kick it to the less dangerous guy. Seattle goes the old school middle wedge, and there's one person back there. And so if you want a chance at a return, Rashid Shaheed is getting the ball. It's not kick it to the other guy or kick it away from him. Unless you want them starting at the 35, Rashid Shaheed's getting the ball. So,
which I don't know why more teams haven't gone back to that. That's interesting. I haven't thought about that, but I mean,
especially in this era with the right. easier returns, like if especially someone like the Patriots too, where they may have the second or third most dangerous return man in the NFL, Marcus Jones, I'd give him an opportunity to make a play. All right, so that takes care of the X Factors, Pony. Now it's time to put it on the table. Are you sticking with your Super Bowl pick from the beginning of the playoffs, or are you changing?
So the reason why, once we got to our initial Super Bowl pick before the playoffs started, the reason why I picked the Patriots to beat the Seahawks was not because I thought the Patriots were a better team than the Seahawks. I don't. It's because it was easier for me to imagine a world in which Drake May was a Super Bowl champion and it was the first chapter in what ends up being an all-time great career and a Hall of Fame career and all of those things. And it was easier for me to fathom that than Sam Darnold being a Super Bowl champion and getting that kind of recognition and us having to readjust how we view him ultimately. But then he went out and played that great game against the Rams in the NFC Championship game. So he's not getting carried to this point. He's not just along for the ride. He went out and made big plays. I am going to pick Seattle. I am going to officially flip my pick. They're a 4.5-point favorite. My bet of the week for Super Bowl 60 is Seattle to win this game by more than 4 points. The E-Man Worry thing has me a little bit concerned, but I think that that's neutralized. That's canceled out by Drake May not being 100%. I mean, May's going to have to run in this game. That's going to open him up for hits. And does that re-aggravate the injury at some point in this game? I think it's very possible. I think Seattle's defense has been pretty underrated the entire year. People say it's great, but they don't really know to what degree because they don't have as many household names as some of the other elite defenses. But I think they're the better team here. And I am going to trust that Sam Darnold does not have a 4-interception or 5-interception game or something like that and completely ruin the game for the rest of the 52 guys on that team. So my official pick here is going to be Seahawks 20, Patriots 12.
In the Super Bowl. 12 points in the Super Bowl, Pony.
Yep.
That is interesting. I do think the overall pick is right, though. I think you would have to be trying to find a lot of the good in the Patriots to keep them. I just think on paper, the Seahawks present too much for the Patriots, right? Like, it's the Super Bowl, and players win games. And I just think there's more on this on the Seahawks side that you can be confident in than there is on the Patriots side on the field that you can be confident. And I don't think the coaching matchup is at such a disparity that, you know, the it gives the Patriots a leg up in that sense. But I don't think this game – Seattle wins this game without consequence. I don't think you get a flawless game from Sam Darnold. I don't. I do think he shows some signs of jitters. He makes some mistakes. But I think the overall team in Seattle is able to make up for it. Drake May has his fair share of mistakes in the playoffs too that the Patriots have had to come overcome, right? Fumble. Yep. Taking bad sacks, right? He's been sacked 15 times in three games in the playoffs. Like, that's,
jeez,
that is way too much in the playoffs. So there's a lot that New England has to overcome as well. I think those things kind of even it out. And like I said, I think just one or two key plays from Seattle breaks, you know, brings this, pulls this out for them. So I'm going Seattle 24, New England 20. They get 20. Okay, not and much.
That's more New England cover, is what that is.
That's New England's covering, so everyone's happy. Everyone's happy.
My MVP is Kenneth Walker. We haven't seen a running back win the MVP of the Super Bowl in a very long time.
Yeah,
I think he has two touchdowns in this game. I think he goes over 100 yards. I think Darnold has pedestrian stats, not great. I think JSN's held under 100 yards, and he ends up being the biggest play guy for Seattle. How about you?
It's tough because I don't want to slight Christian Gonzalez and say that, you know, just you know, go quickly and say JSN is going to be the Super Bowl MVP. But I think in a 24-20 game, I think JSN has not the craziest stat line in the world, but I think I could see him getting to that century mark and having a touchdown in a game where scoring isn't all over the place. You look and you say, Sam Darnold has pedestrian numbers. I don't think Kenneth Walker has a crazy, crazy game in the Seattle wins. And so I think JSN parlays that offensive player of the year with a Super Bowl MVP.
Wow.
And Seattle wins the game.
By the way, I think off the top of my head here, I think the last running back to win Super Bowl MVP was Terrell Davis. And
that far ago?
97.
Against the Packers? Shout out Stink. Yeah, shout out Mark Slayer.
Where he had a migraine in the game and missed an entire quarter and still scored three touchdowns.
And to your point, you know, we talked about this a lot. You know, Mike Shanahan went to John Elway in that Super Bowl and said, hey, man, I know you're a league MVP. I know you've been here a bunch. Do you want to win one of these things or do you want to go home again? And he said, I'd very much like to win one. But okay, if you win one, you're not going to be the MVP. You're not going to throw 35, 40 times. It's not going to be John Elway's game. We're going to run the ball 40 times, and if we win, Terrell Davis is going to be Super Bowl MVP. And apparently John Elway was like, sign me up. But I've lost too many of these things. That's okay. Yeah. And Terrell Davis goes for 225 in the Super Bowl or something like that, and they win MVP. Yeah. And the reason why I picked Seattle, too, is actually something that Mark Schlereth has said. He calls it the confetti test, and I'll bring it to first.
Oh, I know. I love this. Go ahead.
The confetti test, right? Close your eyes, and when you picture the confetti falling, who do you picture standing under that confetti holding up a Lombardi with a backwards cap?
Right.
And initially when I did it, I saw whatever color that is, neon, teal, fluorescent, green, and gray falling on Sam Darnold before I see it on Drake May and Vrabel. So
that's why I originally picked New England, because it was easier for me to picture that happening to Drake May before the playoffs started.
Yeah.
But now I haven't seen Darnold do what he did in the NFC Championship game. I flipped it to Seattle. So, all right. So we both have the Seahawks. The only difference is if we're betting the spread on FanDuel, you like New England plus 4.5, and I'm laying the 4.5 points with.
What about you see Super Bowl MVP, our odds, our pick odds for Super Bowl MVP?
All right. So Kenneth Walker, I think, is plus 850. And what was yours again?
JSN.
JSN is plus 550. So good odds on either one of those.
Kenneth Walker.
You almost 6-1 for you.
Have yourself a nice day. You get Kenneth Walker right.
Hey, thanks everybody for watching and listening to First in Pod, our Super Bowl preview. We will break it all down Monday. Analysis on the final game. It's bittersweet, but we will crown a champion Sunday night in San Francisco, and we'll break it all down for you on Monday. For James Jackson, Patrick Peterson, I'm Andrew Filippone. This is Coastal Podcast.